go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Indeed. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. Of course, you can't go there right now because we're still sorting out the technical issues surrounding the expiration of the domain name, which, incidentally, involves more than me paying $13.95 to the host and then everything being happy again. Just saying. We're pretty good problem solvers around here, but sometimes it takes more than might immediately be obvious. So, there we are. It's our home, but, well, it's not up right now. Which, presents a number of damnable little issues, the least of which is that we are crawling deeper and deeper and deeper into a hole. Oh, well. We'll keep going as long as we can. The back door to the chat room is available for those as want to participate. If you will merely scroll down around somewhere upon my Facebook page, you will find it. I cannot read you the URL so as to get you into the chat room. You will have to go to Facebook. Or Carol Baker's Facebook page. She just, News Ninja Carol Baker just put it up there as well. Okay, can we do that? But we've got a nice little group already gathering in the chat room via the back door. Good evening to News Ninja Carol Baker. Good evening, Gerald. Good evening, Jeremy in Vermont, who says we're loud and clear on TuneIn. Thank you, Jeremy. Good evening, John. Good evening, sentient being Steve. And, of course, good evening to longtime veteran, indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky. And more folks to wander by. It's 3 minutes past the hour. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm told I say that a lot. Or that I appear to like saying that, actually. No, I just get a lot of emails saying, what's that email address again? Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. You can reach me on Twitter, @BobKincaid, Bob Kincaid. You see a pattern developing here? On Facebook. Of course, at Facebook, we also have The Horn. It's a closed group. You have to go and get approved for the group, but you're more than welcome to join in. We're pretty broad-minded about letting folks into the conversation. So yeah, we're in a fundraising hole. It's not as bad as it could be, because thankfully Roger has kindly provided a Have a Show on Me this evening. You know, the Have a Show on Me concept developed, you know, we try to raise $150 per evening to keep this whole thing going. And the Have a Show on Me concept originated, I believe, with our buddy Ed. Hi, Ed. One evening contributed to the entire evening's fundraising goal and said, have a show on me. So Roger is following up with a have a show on me this evening for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. And otherwise the hole would be really miserable. As as it stands, if you, even though the PayPal interface is not there, because the website's not there right now, if you have a PayPal account and you want to contribute, you merely go to your PayPal account, paypal.com, log into your PayPal account, and on the and use the send function, and use Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com, as the recipient address, because that's what's tied to the Horns PayPal account, and it'll come right to us. If you choose sending money to friends and family, because this is a community of friends, then there won't be any fees, transfer fees attached to it. Okay? Sparky says, all you have to do is say PayPal your email. Yes. But you'd be surprised how often that goes sideways. Yeah. Right. But, yeah, it's just you go to PayPal and use bobkincaid@gmail.com. Easy enough. And hopefully, because, oh, God almighty, where are we? Where are we? We're, yeah, around like $200 or so in the hole, at least. And we are more or less at the midpoint of the month of January, the first month of 2015. But enough of that. Let's get into the heart and the heart and soul of Thorn in the Side Thursday, because that's what this is. We will begin with a message from Roger in regard to his Have a Show on Me Thursday. Absolutely, Carol Baker pointing out, you know, we can raise more money when the singing and interpretive dance commences. Behold my dance to ennui. And for the second hour, we'll have me singing Sweet Mystery of Life. At last, I've found you. Taffeta, darling. Right? Yeah. So, Roger's message this evening is, having recently had my fall and winter football viewing time rudely cut in half by the NFL's insistence on turning viewing supporting the NFL and its current manifestation into a deadly sin, I was even more ready than before to spend a lot of time with my TV tuned to all the college bowl games. Given my main thorn in the side topic, and you may recall we've talked, Roger has chimed in on Thorn in the Side Thursday with a message like this in the last couple of months, since around election time, and I think his message is both a viable and a valid one, and an important one. Roger says, given my main thorn in the side topic, I was particularly interested in the ads for the Military Bowl, which was spending a lot of money and airtime to give the appearance that there was some kind of support for the military attached to it. To be clear, this is not an advertisement for the Military Bowl. Wait a minute. The Military Bowl. Based on what I will be sharing with you, Roger continues, it could perhaps be called the Insight Bowl, but even that appears to have been commercially preempted. The Military Bowl is advertised as being presented by Northrop Grumman. Presented by Northrop Grumman. The founding partner, Events DC. The hosting sponsor, Navy. The five-star sponsors, Marriott, Microsoft, New Day, USA, Xbox One. The three-star sponsors, Under Armour, Northrop Grumman FCU, Navy FCU, Budweiser, Shapiro, Lifshitz, Schramm, AI Solutions, Live Casino, Maryland of Opportunity. The two-star sponsors, Allstate Fidelity Investments, Geico Military, JH Associates LLC, Starbucks, Vencore, visitannapolis.org. The one-star sponsors, Anne Arundel, General Electric, L3LMI, Stinger Graffarian Technologies, PenFed. The supporting sponsors, Capital Bank, Gary Sinise Foundation, Long Fence, Marine Corps Marathon, Mercedes-Benz of Annapolis, Northern Virginia Medical Services, Papa John's Pizza, Sutherland, Maryland Wine, J.D. Klein Photography, Katif Brothers, Show Call, Towers Watson. Yes. The Board of Directors, Steve Beck, President and Executive Director, D.C. Bowl Committee, Brandon Belote III, Corporate Vice President, Strategic Communications, Northrop Grumman Corp. Herman Bull, CEO, Public Institutions, Jones Lang LaSalle. Michael Bush, Speaker, Maryland House of Delegates. Rear Admiral Christopher Cole, USN, retired President and Executive Director, Navy Safe Harbor Foundation. William Davis, Jr., Special Agent in Charge, U.S. Secret Service Vice Presidential Protective Division. Stephanie Easter, Executive Director, F-35 Lightning II Joint Program Office. This is an extensive list that includes people like, in addition, Rear Admiral Thomas Lynch, USN retired, Chairman, New Day USA. Joe Reeder, shareholder, Greenberg Traurig. And former Undersecretary of the Army. Vice Admiral William Sullivan, USN retired, Corporate VP for Maritime Programs, L3 Communications. You get the idea. Roger says, with all their talk of supporting military personnel, I can find not one instance of any of them or any member of the Board of Directors spending one nickel or second to weigh in on denying veterans their right to vote if they show up with only their veteran's ID. It has a picture and a branch of service on it as proof of their being themselves. There is no way to become a veteran without having first served in the military. The above long list of organizations and directors all claim to support one while one is paying their dues, but then they are nowhere to be found once one's dues have been paid in full. What a pathetic group of fakes. They should be awarded a precedent shall cold medal for achievement in moral bankruptcy. Yes, military folks, they will have your back, apparently right up to the moment before you need them to have it. The Military Bowl claims to be benefiting USO. The event had a multi-million-dollar budget. The final pennies on the dollar result was almost enough to pay half of the USO president's CEO salary, or perhaps it was used for the $180,000 lobbying expense. The USO needs and spends $180,000 a year in lobbying for itself? Really? But not one penny for veterans' voting rights? Roger says, I really miss that country I voluntarily served to protect back in the 1970s. Indeed. And, of course, the point of all this goes back to the story in November and October of 2014, which Roger found to be so absolutely horrifying. Namely, that in Texas, a veteran's ID issued by the VA is not an acceptable form of identification. It might well be noted, in point of fact, that the Texas legislature is meeting here soon, if not already. Recall that they have a bill, I consider it a secession bill. They have a bill out that says that they will, that if passed and signed into law by Governor Abbott, that in fact, anybody who would happen to issue a marriage license to a couple seeking to get married who were guy and guy or woman and woman would forfeit their pay, and goes so far as to say that no federal court could touch it. We talked about this, I think, Monday evening, didn't we? Well, wouldn't it be a lovely idea if someone in Texas would introduce a bill stating that, yes, veterans' IDs, to the extent that we're going to have to use IDs to vote now, which I object to, if you're registered, by God, you're registered. But if we're going to use photo IDs, then a veteran's photo ID should probably be at the top of the list, not absent from it. And that is in large part Roger's message, and Roger seeks to have people understand and the list is long, these people who participated in the Military Bowl and yet have done nothing to ensure the voting rights of American veterans who might not have a driver's license or some other form of photographic ID, but do have a Veterans Administration photo ID showing their name and their branch of service and a photograph of them. Yes. We'll talk about this a little bit more in the second hour. So, where to begin this evening? Well, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. And Thorn in the Side Thursday is, of course, dedicated, lock, stock, and barrel, to the things that pass for high-minded thinking in the right wing that make us go, don't! Yeah. Enter stage ultra-right, Rand Paul and that thing on his head, libertarian ophthalmologist. Mm-hmm. Rand Paul is upset. Rand Paul is upset because he's not president, one. Rand Paul is upset, I think, because Rand Paul spends a lot of time being upset. Remember, he was upset when a woman at Baylor University down at a state park would not bow before him and worship a bong that he had named Aqua Buddha. Yeah. Rand Paul is also running for president. Oh, he won't admit it, but he is. The Senate is too small to accommodate the big ideas, the big libertarian Ayn Rand-inspired ideas of Rand Paul and that thing on his head. I've got a photograph of him here. It looks like the thing on his head's had a bit of a trim. It's not quite so tentaculated. Tentaculated? Tentacled? Tentacled. Yes. By God, you want to talk about interpretive dance when that thing gets blowing in the wind. That looks like some interpretive damn dance. Rand Paul, running for president, is upset. Well, he doesn't much like the poors. And he's not crazy about the Blas. He would have preferred a free market solution to institutional discrimination at places like lunch counters, water fountains, hotels, etc. in the Jim Crow South. Don't blame me, he said that. The free market can solve that. Oddly enough, the free market had been cruising right along, just humming through the decades, and somehow it managed not to self-correct. Go figure. But now, traveling through the early primary state of New Hampshire, remember, trivia question, you can win a beer in a bar on this. Where is the first return in a presidential election always from? Dixville Notch, New Hampshire. Population, what, 6? Yeah. Marty with a question. Might Rand reach out to the black community by having that thing on his head in dreadlocks? Yeah, well, I'll have nightmares tonight. Thanks, Marty. You're learning to be a giver, just like Carol Baker. Yes, Rand Paul, campaigning as a not-quite candidate in New Hampshire, is upset about disabled people. Really. Shall we?
Some of us would say Medicaid now, we're going to have Medicaid run in other states because, you know, the thing is that all of these programs, there's always somebody who's deserving. Everybody in this room knows somebody who's gaming the system. What I tell people is, if you look like me and you hop out of your truck, you should be getting a disability check. know, over half the people on disability are either anxious or backwards join the club. Who doesn't get up a little anxious for work every day? The backwards. They're over 40.
I know, the audio sucked, didn't it? But the fact that and oddly enough, there were microphones there in front of him, but nobody apparently had them attached to anything that recorded voice. So you get a lot of room noise and the exhaust fan, because, of course, we're in a diner in New Hampshire, because that's where you go. And you heard the people laughing about disabled people. In case there was too much noise, let me translate. He said, the thing is, in all of these programs, and what we're talking about with disability is primarily Title II disability, Social Security, and Supplemental Security Income, which isn't even really Social Security at all. Title II disability is based upon one's previous work history. It's measured by quarters, and depending on how much one earned, there's a graduated scale as to how much one may be compensated in disability. And the Congress has announced, because, well, they've got their priorities nailed right down now that we know that John Boehner was not actually poisoned. They're gonna deal with America's crises as they perceive them, and one of the crises is that there aren't enough physically and mentally disabled people who are starving to death in this country. There's not nearly enough. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, says that half of the people on disability, which, by the way, is not representative of anything, especially not reality. Rand Paul says half of the people on disability are on disability because of stress or a backache. And that everybody knows somebody who's on disability and gaming the system. Yeah, okay. Because Rand Paul, on that thing on his head, libertarian ophthalmologist, says that his back aches every morning. And of course he has stress. You'd have stress too if you had that thing on your head. Welcome to conservative... welcome to compassionate conservatism 2.0. One, and I want to see if we could just make this as clear as possible. One, 50% of people on disability are not gaming the system. Think Progress had a report, and statistical analysis has actually been done on this issue, and it's somewhere around maybe 1% of people getting disability benefits are engaging in some sort of fraud. 1%. The free market business community can't claim that less than 1% of CEOs are gaming the system. No. But that's okay, because reality and statistics and facts don't matter in libertarian world, because they just imagine this nightmare world of moochers and takers and those 47% of America. Hey, how about that? Mitt Romney said 47% of Americans were moochers. Rand Paul now says that half of American disability cases are moochers. That's about a 3% difference, isn't it? Funny how nothing has changed in that regard even after it was a large part of why Mitt Romney got his butt handed to him in the last presidential election. What I tell people is if you look like me and you hop out of your truck, you shouldn't be getting your disability check. I think we could drill down really deeply into this one. Because whoever it was that showed up to listen to him talk chuckled when he said, who doesn't get up a little anxious or for work every day and their back hurts? Everybody over 40 has a little back pain. See, we're not talking about people who are a little anxious or have a little back pain. This really and for truly pisses me off. Because this privileged little prick has apparently never been near anybody who is really, really suffering. People with steel rods supporting their busted up spines. That's not a little backache, Rand. People who have had back surgeries desperate for relief from pain, even though the back surgeries themselves are seldom more than 50% likely to result in a better outcome. And everybody's got some stress? I suppose so. This is a very stressful nation to live in, isn't it? Especially for those who are not part of the Rand Paul class, who are one automotive breakdown away from disaster. That substantial segment of the American population where choices are made on a monthly basis between food for the children and keeping the utilities on. Because unlike Rand Paul's imaginary 50% of disabled people who are gaming the system, that is very much a substantial and sizable reality among America's struggling poor. We ask the working class and the poor in this country to make brutal, hateful choices every month and then talk about the miracle that is capitalism. The Huffington Post article notes, Rand Paul and that thing on his head's comment come as congressional Republicans are poised to push are poised to gut the Social Security Disability Insurance Program. The article notes disability benefits have been a long-standing target of GOP criticism. No, by God, no. Disabled people have been a long-standing target of GOP criticism. So, in typical fashion, as soon as this story began getting some legs, journalism outlets reached out to the communications office of Senator Rand Paul and that thing on his head. At which point, Rand Paul's communications director issued a statement. Under Rand Paul's signature, which apparently someone in his office actually wrote and did not lift from anywhere on the internet, and it reads as follows, and it represents a sublime moment in not understanding the first law of holes, i.e. when you're in one, quit digging, we absolutely should take care of those truly in need of help. But the system is broken, and when people can game the system, they are stealing from those of us who, from those who are truly disabled and won't receive the care and aid they need. Wow. Rand Paul, of his own volition, over his own signature, just called disabled people thieves. Because in point of fact, I know a little bit about the Social Security disability system, and I know a little bit about the Supplemental Security Income system. One, if a country, and remember, the United States is the greatest country in the world, cannot absorb a 700 and some odd dollar payment to its monthly payment to its absolute most fragile citizens, We're circling the drain. I mean, let's assume for a moment that Rand Paul and that thing on his head are telling the truth. That these are facts he's dealing with and not the weird libertarian fantasies of his bong-eaten mind. America can't afford people. You know what? I think every American citizen making less than, hey, how about this? How about every American citizen making less than, let's pick an arbitrary number here, $60,000 a year should get $750 a month just for being an American? Oh, it's Socialism Thursday on the horn! And this privileged ass has obviously never been through the application process. Let's say you've got a ruined back. Try jumping through hoops with it. Taint fun. And that business about stress? We're talking about something that is, in fact, crippling, about which Rand Paul and that thing on his head give not a single good goddamn. But he has called American people thieves. He hasn't just called any American people thieves. He has called disabled people thieves. Because while he says that everybody knows somebody's gaming the system, I've been hearing that for 20, 25 years. And I have never met anybody who was gaming the system. There are standards involved. And you know what? Just because you can get up in the morning and pull on your pants one leg at a time does not mean that you're good for an 8-hour day of labor somewhere. In many instances, these are people who have been broken on the wheel of the capitalism that Rand Paul and that thing on his head worship. They have literally been broken upon the rack. Okay, figuratively. Robert in Australia says, this tired old story. Every so often, the current affairs programs on the commercial networks here in Australia do a story about all the people on disability who are faking it. The way the stories are presented, you'd think everyone who's disabled is extorting the system. They'll show you security footage of disabled people working as bricklayers or running marathons, and it makes it seem like everyone who's on disability is a crook. At the end of the day, it's never more than a handful, less than 0.01% or less. The question these programs never ask is how those people who are actually cheating manage to get past the extensive checks and rechecks required to get disability support in this country. I hate those stories, Robert says, and the people see them and just assume every disabled person is a fake. And the politicians who always seem to jump on the disabled bandwagon. You see, here's the thing. You might not be able to work a 40-hour week. You might not be able to work a 30 or a 20 or a 10. But this is a brutal country. The greatest country in the world. And there's nobody out there that's going to mow your goddamn grass. Or get the leaves out of your gutter. For the most part. And disability income doesn't provide just a hell of a lot of extra money laying around. Ron and Raleigh with an obviously hypothetical question. Hey, Bob, you think Rand would have some back pain if I put my size 13s up his sorry, hateful, mean-spirited ass? Might even have some stress worrying about it. Ron also pointing out, hey, Bob, remember Milton Friedman said that he didn't believe that fraud should be against the law? Yeah, he did, didn't he? Well, you know, not for the good guys, the captains of industry, the masters of the universe, no. But Jesus Christ, if you can manage to shove a lawnmower around your yard and not die, well, you're obviously not disabled and you should be out contributing to the wealth of the CEO class, damn it. That's why you were born. That's why you exist. Eat, excrete, and die, prole. Another note coming in from Dan. Subject line, Rand Paul's disgusting comments. Dan says, I work for Social Security. We work hard to make fair determinations for people who are prevented from working. Any of the people who qualify for those benefits would gladly trade places with that prick. Daily, I review claims of people who are doing the best they can, sometimes despite monumental odds. These filthy repiglickens change their tune quickly when they need the benefits. Oh, yeah. You know, a classic case in point is Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas. This is a guy who had a terrible stroke of misfortune, for lack of a better word, and was deprived of his mobility. Now, Greg Abbott hollers constantly about lawsuit abuse and tort reform and all that silly shit. Silly, mean-spirited shit. But by God, he was right there on the courthouse steps when it was time to sue somebody over the event that deprived him of his mobility. Kiss up, kick down, baby. Igum foo. I got mine. F you. You know, that could be, if we had a graphic artist who really wanted to take a run at it, that could be the new seal, great seal of the GOP. Maybe a pig vomiting another pig, thus re-pig-licking. And over the around the top, kiss up, kick down. And under the bottom, IGMFU, Igum Foo. Now, I know a little bit about this because I was part of the clinic program when I was at Harvard on the Mon. having my cup of coffee in the law school there. And we represented indigent people who were desperately in need of SSI. We were, of course, under the supervision of a real, live, honest-to-God lawyer. But we were allowed to go down and make the arguments, and they're administrative cases. It's not like federal district court or anything. And we got to see firsthand the people that are served by the SSI program. And I never met a one for instance, SSI is often referred to, at least in these parts, as the drunk check or the crazy check. Yeah, that's and people, the recipients themselves, will call it that. Because they have been so thoroughly demeaned by both media and politicians and their neighbors. Don't forget their neighbors. Because one part of this is true. Rand Paul is saying this stuff because it's been polled, it's been focus grouped and polled, and it has resonance with the people he wants to vote for him. Because they, by God, and it's part of the whole fetish of punishment and pain upon which this country thrives as a result of its puritanical origins, and there but for the grace of God goeth, you know, them but not me. It's kind of like something I wrote the other day about growing up in the Southern Baptist Church and being a recovering Southern Baptist. There was all kinds of screaming and carrying on every Sunday about all the people who were going to hell. But when I got older, I realized that these sermons were little more than gossip. God gossip. Because none of the people in the congregation were going to hell because they was all saved. So in essence, all the people going to hell were the people who weren't in our church that Sunday. And so it is with puritanical America, who is sure that there are people out there who don't deserve disability benefits, because if they were disabled, they would. So this is nothing more than another assault on the poor, because the disabled are in this country the poor. Nobody's getting rich. It's like and you see these things sort of weaving back and forth and dovetailing together. The argument, and I saw it promulgated again, the number's gone up. It's kind of like Keystone XL jobs. If you read some of the people who are proponents of the Keystone XL pipeline, there's going to be 12 million jobs created out of the Keystone XL pipeline, and we're going to have frisbees and wheat checks for everybody. Only they're not. Going to be almost no job, almost no permanent jobs at all out of Keystone XL, and a few miserable temporary jobs. Disability, the same mindset of exaggeration works with disability and welfare, because remember the other night we had the. Who was it? Senator Ron Johnson, and it almost made Jenny in Wisconsin scream at the mere mention of his name. You know, your average welfare mother there can get $51,000 a year in welfare benefits, dare hey, as long as she dare hey keeps having dare hey babies, dare hey. Mm-hmm. I forget who it was that was saying it, but I saw another clip last night, and in the space of a couple of days, it had, Jesus, I mean, Talk about a growth industry. Them uteruses is a growth industry because in just a couple of days it had gone from 51,000 to 61,000. I imagine by Valentine's Day, your average baby spitting out welfare mama will probably be making as much as the CEO of ExxonMobil. Only, of course, it's not. It's not at all. But this is the degree to which white-wingers, Repiglicans, birthers, deathers, tenthers, baggers, booger-eaters, birchers, libertarians, and the lot are divorced from reality and, in fact, from daily life. And yes, I'm biased. I was a teenager, just starting high school, when my father started having chest pains. He had worked in and around furnaces since he was in his 20s. And he had crossed that line past 50. And on any given day there at the silicon furnace, he would have to climb in coal and coke smoke-laced air 5 and 6 stories to get up to the top of the furnace where the electrodes went down into the pile. And he got to where he was short of breath, and these chest pains would come on with exertion from time to time. And they came on more and more and more often. He'd also worked in the coal mines. He'd worked in a boiler room in an aircraft carrier where practically everything was sheathed in asbestos. And his case is nothing particularly unique. That's what we've done with the working class in America. We've practically drowned them in toxins, and then we bitch when they can't work until the day they die, or that they don't work until the day they die. And so, as I was beginning my high school career, by the time I had gotten to, around the midpoint, and understand, my father was middle management. He was a foreman on that furnace. He had stood by his company through thick and thin. Busted ass. Missed God knows how many central events in his family's life. They made him, well, I mean, they didn't make him, but, you know, he had to be called at work the day that his eldest son got his brains blown out. My brother. And he took as little time as necessary to deal with the details of that horror and the obsequies required of it. And then, by God, he was back at work! Because there was work to do. And in many ways, whatever legacies my father left me, that is chief among them. You go where the work is, and you work. But anyway, regardless of all that, when he developed a medical condition, it was angina, and the front end of COPD. Hell, he'd been treating for breathing problems for years. upper-level management above him came to him and said, Ken, why don't you just quit? You know, you can get you a nice, easy job at a gas station, get you one of them nickel squirters, and you can, you know, you can quit and just work at that as long as you want to. But my father was not like the modern industrial worker in a place like West Virginia. Of course, this was Alabama. And he looked at him and said, you sorry sons of bitches. I've been paying into a pension, and you know if I quit, I lose my pension. Well, hell, we're not going to give you your pension anyway. Yeah, you will. Yeah, you will. And so he had to retire on disability, and he had to apply for Social Security disability, and he had to struggle to get that Social Security disability. And then he had to turn around and fight like a damn demon to get the pension that he had already paid for. And he won. So yeah, I bring some bias to this topic. And then there are people like Paul Ryan. His daddy died. And he lived on Social Security all the way into his adulthood. It's what allowed him to get an education, to have a roof over his head. You know, every time he mentions Paul Ryan, the great Charlie Pierce adds parenthetically, "You're welcome, dickhead." Because Paul Ryan can think, Paul Ryan is central to this argument that we've got to reform disability, or the disabled will destroy the American economy. Note coming from Barbie. I would gladly give up my crutches, cane, walker, narcotics, and the 7 spinal surgeries for Rand Paul to walk or crawl in my shoes just one day. I used to put into 60 to 70 hour work week as a medical technologist and respiratory therapist just to show him what a stupid son of a bitch he is and knows nothing of which he speaks. Ask Carol about the time I begged for her or my husband or the ER to kill me because the pain was so intractable. Thank God I was out of my mind in pain and remembered nothing of those instances. I now have to live on narcotics in order to have any quality of life, if there is such a thing. Rand Paul indeed can go fuck himself. Thank you, Barbie. Thank you for your candor and your courage. Because, see, that's another thing about the disabled in this country. They have more they have more courage in their goddamn toenail clippings than is to be found in the entire miserable, useless body of Rand Paul and that thing on his head. There is a significant portion of the American population that I generally think of as the weak, the weary, and the wounded. And they have self-sacrificed on the altar of this nation. And their blood has been an offering that is pleasant in the nostrils of our betters. The 1%. Doctor Who says, you know, it was the same with my dad, Bob. I know exactly what you're talking about. A lot of people in this country do. Mr. Gibson pointing out, Bob, if anything, the disabled help the economy. They spend their money without displacing any workers. And that is something that applies broadly across my class. We don't invest in the market. We go to the supermarket when we have money. We don't buy stocks. We look for the manager's special to make chicken stock. And when we get a little extra money, we don't say, well, let's put this away for a rainy day. We go and fix something that's broken. Because in many instances, there's lots of stuff broken. And we fix what we can when we can. And we don't bitch about it and we don't complain. Ron in Raleigh writes, my former supervisor's wife has 5 coronary stents and she's diabetic. There are some days where she can barely walk 20 feet without stopping to rest. Guess what? She was denied SSDI. The company she works for has threatened to fire her because she can't do her job. Gaming the system? The sad thing is they will be able to get rid of SSDI. A 19% cut is already in the pipeline for 2016. After that, President Not Sure will have signed into law Change CPI, which will cut retirement benefits. Nobody is on the side of decent, hardworking people. Sure seems that way, doesn't it, Ron? But there is truth, a sort of backhanded truth, in what Rand Paul and that thing on his head say. People are gaming the system. The people gaming the system are the people who think that Rand Paul is correct and that we're all just a bunch of freeloaders out here. Because, you see, if you presented the facts to Rand Paul that show that less than 1% of people are actually defrauding the system, he wouldn't accept that as reality. Because his mind is convinced that somebody's getting his money! And it's his money! Mine. Robert in Australia says, I often hear stories from people about someone they know who isn't disabled, who is working the system. These amazing people know how to get money and housing for nothing from the government without any effort at all. When I put these tales to the test and ask them, who is this person or why haven't you reported them, it becomes clear that it's just a story that's been told to someone else who's told it to them that they then repeat like they've experienced it firsthand. I generally have a few choice words for those people at that time. Sorry for going on like this, but attacking people who can't fight back is the lowest act I know of, and it pisses me off! It's okay. We should be pissed off. Randy says, let me confess, I'm on Social Security disability due to a brain condition, and it makes up only one half of my living expenses. I perceive that I got blackballed by industry and government about 30 years ago. I take medication for extreme stress, so I apologize if I've sent you harsh emails in the past. Don't worry. Don't worry. Don't worry, Randy. We have labored under the lash . We have been shot at, killed. I'm talking about the working class. I'm talking about the people who built this country. You know, for all the specials that you see on the History Channel, some history aliens.
You'll see biographic documentaries about J.P. Morgan or about John D. Rockefeller, about those robber barons of the Gilded Age. And I would say there is not 1 minute for every 10,000 minutes about the captains of industry. There's not 1 minute on the people who made them rich. They didn't build this country. By God, we did. Our forebears did. Our ancestors. Every one of the brothers of my great-grandfather worked in the coal mines. Lonnie Kincaid was killed in the coal mines when he was 23 years old. They were all, to one degree or another, affected by it, whether it was the inability to breathe or walk well. And I was looking at my family history the other day, and frankly, it was a little unnerving, because all those Kincaid boys of a couple of generations back . Some didn't make it out of their 40s. Most didn't make it to 70. The oldest one did live to a ripe old age up in his 90s and kept his mind to the very end. You know why? Because he was the one who had spent the least amount of time in the coal mines. Robert in Morgantown pointing out, maximum SSI is $733 as of January 200, 2015. $8,796 a year and $1,200 in food stamp benefits equals $9,996. Still less than $10,000. At that, a $10 bill, a single $10 bill, is a full 0.1% of your yearly income. And Rand Paul begrudges people that. Here's one for Rand Paul and that thing on his head. If half the people are gaming the system and you want to cut half the people off of SSI and SSDI, are you going to double the benefits for the people who aren't gaming the system, Rand? Oh, hell no! They're already moochers, and that's the whole point. In the mind of Rand Paul, in that libertarian swamp that sloshes around between his ears and provides a little insulative cover for his great big giant lizard brain, disabled or not, everyone is stealing because they're not him. It's like something I was reminded of on Facebook earlier today. My friend Richard pointed out a speech made by George H.W. Bush, not W, but George H.W., Pappy Bush, in which he said, "Well, we had a war on poverty, and we won." And all the Republicans in the office went, "Ho, ho, ho, oh, that is a funny one, Poppy. Oh, look, look, Mother, Poppy made a ha-ha." Rand Paul and that thing on his head's comments did not escape the notice of the Social Security Administration. Dan sends that along. It has apparently garnered considerable attention. This very day, agents of the FBI deliberately filled out 40 arrest warrants related to Social Security fraud. Yeah.
And this guy's being treated as a serious candidate for the presidency of the United States. But understand, if he's saying it, a lot more are thinking of it. Understand that in this country there are a lot of your fellow Americans who hate your goddamn guts. Who wonder why you couldn't just die on the job. I found the shitty watch that they gave my father upon his retirement. Engraved upon the back were the words, "For loyal service." Yeah. Of course, Reynolds Aluminum, Reynolds Metals Company, labored under no similar illusions that they had engaged in any sort of loyalty. And yet, a little bit of a denouement to that whole story. The last time we had my father home, last time he was in his home, middle of the last decade, he said he wanted to go out to see the plant. Because ultimately he loved his work. It's the way it is with working people. They're working people because they love to work. Because unlike the 1%, we understand that there is a joy in a job well done. That there is more to life than sitting around and waiting for somebody else to do something for us. That eureka moment when you do something you didn't think you could do, when you figure out something you thought had you stumped, is existentially defining. And he wanted to go see the plant. So we went out to the car, and he and I drove, it's about 8 miles, drove through downtown Florence, across the O'Neill Bridge into Sheffield. Hung a left, out to Muscle Shoals, turned left again on 2nd Street, and followed that rifle shot road a few miles out to a place called Ford City that was once to be the home of Henry Ford's nascent automotive empire instead of Detroit. We had turned off of Woodward Avenue, in point of fact, onto 2nd Street. Our listeners from Detroit will recognize the name of that drag. Went through the ruins of Ford City, where weeds grew up around sidewalks 80 years old that were never trod upon. And out to a place called Blister Hill,
named after an Alabama senator who had been instrumental in convincing industry to come down to the Tennessee Valley to partake of the insanely inexpensive hydroelectric power and around which an industrial base had grown up that had transformed that area into something magnificent in a middle-class kind of way. And we got out to the plant. We parked across from it and just looked at it, or what was left of it, because everything that my father had labored for, everything that he had sweated for, everything that he had bled for, the place where a few drops of molten silicon metal had fallen into a puddle of water, causing an explosion that set two of his crewmen on fire, whom he put out with his own hands, pulling their skin away on his in the attempt to keep them alive by putting out the fire, covering them with his own body. The furnace floor, where a piece of bare naked electrical wire wandered its way into an electrical puddle and dosed Dad with a whopping good jolt of 440. We drove in the middle of the night, Mother and I, to pick him up from the hospital. He was back at work the next day. Furnace was gone. It had become what is referred to euphemistically as a brown field. A vast, flat, concreted, empty space with weeds doing what weeds do best, and that is working their way up through any vulnerability in the concrete to retake the place. And that entire furnace, both of them, those furnaces, gigantic operations that they were, had been taken apart piece by piece, numbered, in fact, put on the auction block, so to speak, and sold off to China. So that now, January the 16th there, 2015, there's some Mandarin-speaking man climbing flights of stairs and huffing and puffing and wondering what those pains are in his chest. And his boy, or his girl, his family, sit at home doing homework. And as he climbs up the stairs, he says, I hope he doesn't have to do this. And that's what propels him the next step up that flight. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. They hurt you at home and they hit you at school. They hate you if you're clever, and they despise a fool. Till you're so fucking crazy you can't follow their rules. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. When they tortured and scared you for 20 odd years, then they expect you to pick a career. When you can't really function, you're so full of fear. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. Keep you doped with religion and sex and TV. And you think you're so clever and classless and free. But you're still fucking peasants as far as I can see. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. There's room at the top, they are telling you still. But first you must learn how to smile as you kill. You want to be like the folks on the hill. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me.
It's Thursday, January 15, 2015.
Methane is right behind carbon dioxide as the second most important global warming gas.
Obama's big move to cut methane. But there's a catch.
Tempers flared at the state capitol today as students, professors, and parents clashed over how climate change should be taught in schools.
West Virginia and the fight for science in science textbooks. Good news and bad news on sea level rise. Plus,
I think all cars will go electric.
Car wars. It's Chevy versus Tesla in the race for electric cars.
Fast cars, really slow race. All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
You don't need to regulate us. We're going to self-regulate anyway.
Oh, thanks, oil industry. Then we're all good. What could possibly go wrong? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, well, your tyrannical leader first started by calling for huge cuts in carbon dioxide emissions, and now he's upping his fanatical fascist stakes by calling for reductions in methane emissions. Oh, what next, Desi Doyen?
Well, I don't know how fanatical or fascist they are, but...
Tyrannical? Are they tyrannical?
No, they're not so tyrannical either. The Obama administration is just cracking down on the greenhouse gas methane. He's going to use executive order to issue new standards to cut methane emissions from the rapidly growing oil and gas sector. This is required to address global warming, according to climate scientist Michael Oppenheimer on PBS NewsHour.
Per ton emitted, it's 28 times more potent than carbon dioxide. So if you want to affect the rate of warming over the next few decades, you need to complement the very deep cuts in carbon dioxide that we need to solve the problem with parallel cuts in methane.
Methane is a primary component of natural gas. It leaks out at every stage of oil and gas production. The new standards would cut methane emissions from oil and gas operations 40% over the next 10 years. Environmental groups say it's a start, but it's not enough because the new standards apply only to new production, not existing facilities. Oil industry groups criticized the new rules as unnecessary. But
of course they did.
Oh, yeah. And you can expect a burst of industry lawsuits.
All supported by Republicans who, as you know, hate frivolous lawsuits.
Some good news on sea level rise, sort of. Researchers measuring sea level rise have hit upon a new statistical technique that solves a troubling discrepancy of how fast sea levels rose since 1900. The good news is the study gives us more accurate measurements of how fast sea levels are rising. The bad news, it indicates sea levels are rising at a much faster rate than previously thought.
Oh man, it's like you give us good news and then punch us in the face.
Well, here's some good news. It's a victory for kids and science education in West Virginia.
I find it odd to claim that the science is settled.
After a public outcry and a hearing,
there were changes made to the approved science standards that are just inaccurate.
The West Virginia State Board of Education has reversed itself, withdrawing controversial changes to science textbooks made by a few board members that tried to cast doubt on the global scientific consensus on global warming.
And they were kind of tricky about it. Originally, one of the mandates said, quote, ask questions to clarify evidence of the factors that have caused the rise in global temperatures over the past century. That seems fine. But then the board changed it to ask questions to clarify evidence of the factors that have caused the rise and fall of temperatures over the past century.
And of course, they haven't fallen.
You see what they did there?
Yep.
So those attempted changes caused a big debate at the state school board meeting.
For some reason, they've singled out this one type of science and say it's all right to debate it, when really there is no debate.
But they were pushed back, apparently.
Yes, apparently sanity and science prevailed.
Even in West Virginia.
Finally, get ready for the electric car wars. They're still a minuscule segment of the auto industry, but automakers are moving forward. This week at the Detroit Auto Show, Chevy launched its new updated Chevy Volt, which will now go 50 miles on a single charge.
A 911 caller seems to know what Cleveland police did not,
new, much
that the gun to mere life
Chevy
at the Goodell Rec Center
Bolt
on November 22nd
Bolt.
Was a toy.
Set for release in 2017, it'll go 200 miles on a single charge and will only cost $30,000 after federal rebates. But Tesla CEO Elon Musk promptly stepped on Chevy's Bolt at the Automotive News World Congress nearby in Detroit. Musk announced that Tesla's new all-electric car, the Model 3, will cost even less, $3,000 less than the Bolt after federal incentives. Musk isn't worried about competition from the Bolt, however.
I don't see it as a competitive threat just because I think all cars will go electric.
And so it's really just a question of when it goes fully electric. And if we can make it go electric sooner, then that will be much better for the world.
Okay, deal, Elon Musk. Send us a free Tesla, and we will make it the official car of the Green News Report.
Yep.
How can you turn that down? For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Until Elon donates a free Tesla, we could use your support. Please consider a donation when you stop by. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Maybe you can drive my car, and maybe I love you. Beep, 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 yeah. Beep, 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 yeah. Beep, 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 yeah.
Saw that bump out coming from a mile away, didn't you? 24 minutes past the hour. About 6 minutes away from the halfway point of this Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. Lines are open. We've got one on hold. I think that's Bill on the Gizmo line, 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. And the line is open at 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. Before I go to the phones, the second part of the message from Roger, who provided us very kindly a have a show on me contribution this evening. And remember that, well, why bother?
Roger says, chewing on one chunk at a time. Interim measure on Texas and similar voter ID rules on unacceptability of veteran ID cards is proof of being a voter being voter. This has got my ire up. I realize there aren't that many people as a percentage of the total population whose best or most readily accessible ID is their veteran's ID, but this is a group worth thoughtful consideration. Whether their treatment at the VA is due to a physical wound or something less visible like PTSD, it is not grounds for the state of Texas or any other place to add them to the list of people who they think do not matter, or particularly in Texas's case, do not deserve to vote. If anything, that kind of treatment could exacerbate a PTSD, and no one in the real world feels better after being told they don't matter any longer, now that they can't go and serve in a foreign war for a corporate agenda. What I propose, until such time as the dignity of the person is restored, I would like to ask active duty members of the armed forces whose ID is considered valid in these localities to work on restoring dignified treatment of those who served with them or before them. Other groups can mount similar campaigns for their disaffected comrades. When you attend a political function or any place that politicians will be present, do so in uniform. Ask your politicians what their position is on your state's law regarding rejecting veterans' ID for voter ID purposes. Do not tell them what they should say. Ask them to explain on the record what their position is. Please do not wait like the faux opposition groups that pretend to object to laws but always show up with too little too late to make a difference until a few weeks before an election to start doing this. Begin doing it now, not as a special endeavor, but as an adjunct to your current routine. At some point, the squeaky wheel principle, from being reminded that they supported the original bill or have failed to propose fixing the current one, should result in corrective legislation well in time for the next election cycle. Roger says, thank you for at least considering this. I think it's a damn fine idea. Can you imagine if a whole bunch of people from, say, Fort Hood were to find their way in uniform over to the Texas state capitol and say, hey, by the way, we're going to be veterans someday, and we'd like for our VA IDs to count as voter identification. Better yet, of course, would be to get rid of all these photo ID voter suppression laws, but I understand Roger's point entirely. To the phones. Is that you, Bill?
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm okay. How about you?
Oh, interesting day, Bob. I had a social worker over here today checking on me to make sure I wasn't pulling their chain about medical situations, you know. They have to do that. And now what we used to call Medicaid is called MyCare Ohio. They took control over it. Our governor is, you know, he's our governor. I remember Governor Rose, when he was on radio one time years ago, when he hadn't been elected yet, and he kept pointing a finger at these villains, Hoffa, Reuther, and company. Those villains were kept pointing a finger at him, you know.
Yeah.
And I've told you too many times about playing a job, and people came in from the when they burned the ROTC building, and my first thought was, somebody's going to pay for that. And how many days later did four people get, you know, killed?
Yeah.
And the National Guard had been out with a truck strike, and there was, I don't think there was a bit of violence between them and the truckers. Because I don't think they would have wanted to sample antagonizing a trucker. Or four or five truckers and two of them, I don't think they would have liked it much. The reaction could have been harsh, shall we say. But I did get the new chopper, so that's a nice
thing. Hey, that's wonderful.
Yeah, well, they said about it, they don't fit that well, but I'll get used to them. I guess being a masochist, it's, you know, it's no problem anyhow. No, actually, they always straighten them out for you. I went to a couple of dentists that were recommended to me who were both female. They ran their own office, and I walked in there the first time, and the woman said, Bill, I saw you guys play so many nights, because the dental school was Case Western. It was Case had an engineering school, and Reserve has a big social service and medical, two of the old school, but better places to attend school there. My piano player was a staff photographer for that school. They still hire him occasionally. But the cameras are a thing of the past, you know. These phone cameras are uncovered. They're digging up a lot of dirt, aren't they, Bob, with those cell phone cameras?
The question is, to what extent does it do any good, Bill? Because there was video, there was video footage of Eric Garner being choked to death. There was video footage of Tamir Rice being gunned down. I mean, we got lots of video footage of a lot of people being tormented by police. It doesn't seem to slow them down much.
Yeah, these police today seem to be a lot different than the guys I knew who had served in Vietnam. And heck, when was the last time when we, the name that was used for our enemies was Mr. Charles, you know?
Yeah.
In Vietnam, the men referred to him, their opponents as Mr. Charles. Because those men, those Vietnamese, they wanted their country. And, you know, but on the other hand, when I want French coffee and chicory, you go to a Vietnamese delicatessen and they sell it to you. Because they drank it. They drank that style of coffee in Vietnam. It's one thing about food. Food goes all the way around the world, Bob. I just wish.
Well, actually, you mentioned that coffee with chicory, and I went looking for some decaf coffee with chicory just the other night, and I think the best price I found was like $7 a can, and I'll probably—I think I'm going to spring for a can at some point soon because you got me hankering for it.
Who's marketing? What name are they marketing under?
Oh, there were several different brands, but this was at some website I think called French, Cajun Market or something. But you know, there was French Market, there was Louisiana, there were a couple of others.
I talk to them down there at that. I buy it, as I say, it comes from. You can get it under. The name that I like to get it under was Café du Mont.
Oh, I love the Café du Mont. And, of course, there's nothing quite like being, you know, in the quarter and having a cup, along with one of those hotter than the interior of a volcano fresh out of the fat beignets.
Oh, yeah, that's. I never went there, and Bob, I love New Orleans jazz so much, and I kept kicking myself, Bill, when are you going to go down there? When are you? Because I had the money and the situation to be able to do it, but, well, I would rather go to Canada and fish for 2 weeks, or Chautauqua Institute has a great lake that you can just come home with 25 pounds of clean fish that you caught, and the next year, you ate it constantly. You ate it every month because I love fish, you know. And I know you talk about walleye in Minnesota, Wisconsin.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Particularly in Wisconsin.
Yes. I have a picture of me in my apartment. I'm holding a 7-pound walleye that I caught at 4 o'clock in the morning, because when the water temperature goes up or down, it reaches a point where the shad are moving. And these walleye, me and my friends who are fishermen, avid fishermen, we think they live in the rocks on the break, under the break wall all year long. They don't migrate. And they do, during the course of the year, they'll migrate from the shallow, you know, of the west end down to, in fact, my brother-in-law once caught a 36-inch salmon, king salmon. And New York puts king salmon in the lake up at their end. And this guy came swimming all the way down here, up a narrow creek, and into another creek, and that's where we live on one, quite by accident, my brother-in-law caught this damn thing. He has it mounted. Well, that's like the old story about a guy going into the taxidermist with two dogs, and the guy says, the taxidermist says, do you want them mounted? And the guy says, well, no, shaking hands would be okay.
I was waiting. I was waiting, Bill.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's a punchline for everything. But
yeah, not unless I get roses first.
Yeah, well, you hit it so beautifully talking about your dad, and this is how these men work, Bob. They were born to work. Something moved them to this. And man, they could teach you everything. They could, teach you. One uncle taught me how to paint a damn car, but I never was too good at it. But and this paint they have now, you can't do that. We used to use a lot of enamel and such, cheap. So the name of a car was not to have it drive you into the poorhouse. The idea was to be able to afford to drive it, and we did. We had to. But yeah, I don't know. There's something I heard that they were blasting from the football game, the Dallas game. The quarterback, I forget the quarterback's name in Green Bay.
Aaron Rodgers, yeah.
Yeah. He came to the line and they had this taped. He gets up to the line and he calls out, "New York Bozo, New York Bozo." Well, I think he meant to say New Jersey, but I think I know who that was aimed at. Because that moron was sitting in the owner's box for both of the Green Bay games.
Right.
Both, and the Lions, of course, I can listen to, in fact, when your show ends at 9 o'clock, I can switch over and usually catch a Detroit Red Wings hockey game and, kind of work off something, because we had a minor league team here when there was only 6 teams in the National Hockey League. You saw some great guys playing minor league hockey. And then they started importing the players. The Rutgers sent over the first Red Wings team to win a cup in 20-some years or more. And what they call the Russian Five. They had 5 men from the Red Army team skating. Now they've got a whole lot of Swedes. Who is that, the Swedish fellow called the part of the family?
Scott?
Yeah.
Yeah, Scott from Sweden.
Yeah, Sweden has produced one hell of a... In fact, there's one defenseman who is considered very close to Bobby Orr in quality of play. Lidstrom, Lidstrom, Nick Lidstrom. He just retired a few years ago, but... Yeah, Detroit has gone after the Swedes heavy, and then there was a guy who was just, there was a guy from the Czech Republic, although it was Czechoslovakia then, and he won a cup for the Red Wings, and I think some with Buffalo also. It's really an international game. Basketball has a few foreign players, but. Like I tell my aides, my health aides, I said, look, when I was a kid, a team from East Technical High School, a black team, would come down and borrow a broom and they'd clean the snow off the court and start playing. And they'd say, you guys want to play? And yeah, I'd play, but it was a downright embarrassment, Bob. These men were so damn good.
And you're not exactly height gifted, are you, Bill?
The what? No. No. I'm 6 feet and height gifted. No.
And I'm a little bit north of 6 feet, but gravity has always had a profound and perhaps disproportionate impact on me, so that hoops was never my game.
Well, as a pretty, you were a baseball player, weren't you?
Well, yeah, and I played high school football very poorly too. Very bad golfer as well. I haven't played golf in more than 10 years, but I was a bad golfer into the bargain.
Well, I don't know. Golf is a rich man's game, isn't it?
No, it's a sadist's game, or actually, it's a masochist's game.
Yes,
I get them confused from time to time. Mark Twain just said it was a good walk, Lewis.
Well, my temperament, I could see me playing with this. Instead of golf clubs that have all been bent in half, it doesn't.
Oh, I've seen awe-inspiring temper tantrums on the golf course. The trick, though, is that golf, 99% of golf or more, is played between your ears. And if you're snapping golf clubs and throwing hissies and stuff, then get off the course. You go bowling. But it took me a long time, but I finally got to the point where I was at peace with how awful I was. And you know, I call it the heroin moment. You can be out there, and you know, I played public course golf, you know, $14 for a round or something like that. You know, you spend more money on golf balls and beer. I finally realized that I was there for fun, so I should probably leave the beer alone till afterwards. But two, I realized that, you know, I suck. And what you'll have when you get at peace with that game, what happens to you is you have what I call the heroin shot at least once a round. And the reason I call it that is because at least once in any round of golf, you will hit the ball as perfectly, exquisitely, magnificently as any pro. And you will stand there in awe as that ball flies exactly where you meant for it to go, lands exactly how you had meant it to land, goes exactly where you finishes exactly where you meant it to finish. And even if you wind up 18 holes, if you wind up with a score of 162, the only shot that matters is that one, and you will come back on account of that one. And it is as profound, you know. Because you gotta have it again. That's why I call it the heroin shot. You gotta have it again.
Yeah, that's what I've talked to golfers. My second wife liked to golf, and she had a body type that was hard for her to get the club out because of certain protuberances in the upper body. You know, it's hard to get around that when you're working physically, and you gotta take a You gotta learn how to do it, I guess, like everything else. But you ever see the movie White Men Can't Jump?
Oh, sure.
Oh, was that a piece of work or what?
I haven't seen that in a very long time, but yeah, it was. It was indeed. Hey, Bill, it's good talking to you. We'll talk again soon. And
before I go, I'm going to put something out there. I'm looking for a new album of Woody Guthrie stuff that was just released. I'm trying to find out what the label is and where I can get it.
Okay, anyway, there's a new Woody Guthrie collection out, and we need to know what label it's on, what the title of the album is, and I'll bet you people will find it short order.
Well, I hope so. I'll be listening. You take care. There's so many good callers. Keep going. I'll talk to you.
All right. Take care, Bill. Have a good night. Stay warm.
Bye.
Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, legendary bluesman, calling from Cleveland. Hey, Larry.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm okay. I was trying to look for the Horn website in the chat room, and there's it's not there.
No, it's not.
I don't know what happened, but
I'll tell you what happened. We have domain name registry issues.
Oh boy.
That extend beyond simply paying for the domain registration. Things have gone sideways.
Oh God. Well,
we'll try to get it back as soon as we possibly can. Assuming we can get it back while we're still on the air.
It's good to hear Bill. I posted the governor's proposed budget, the summary for you to take a look at. The governor on the 10th of January every year he releases his proposed budget, and then the proposed budget goes into the legislature, and then they have public hearings. I assume they do a similar thing in all the other states. And then the legislature makes its, they go through their sausage-making process, and then eventually sometime around May, they do a revise of the budget based upon they look at the finances, and they either assume that they look at the projections, and if the finances look good, they'll let people know about it, and vice versa. And then the governor signs a budget, or at least legally he's supposed to sign the budget by June 30th, and they've been able to do that in California the last couple of years, I believe. And it looks like we have a budget surplus, but it looks like a lot of that's going to go for that bullet train. Governor wants that bullet train.
I think a lot of progressive America wants that bullet train.
I can understand it, but I also can understand that they're cutting a lot of other programs.
That's the problem, Larry. We ought to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time, as the saying goes, especially a state as big as California.
Yeah. Well, what's gone on is he's decided that he's not going to grant, he's not going to give the UCs, the UCs asked for more money. He's not going to give the UCs more money this time. So they're going to have to, UCs are going to have to face a conundrum of, well, do we raise tuition? And do we have to deal with that, and they have to deal with that every year, and you know that there are going to be protests around tuition raises. And, you know, they don't want to raise taxes. Well, they have actually raised a few taxes on, you know, wealthier people in California, but they don't want to raise them on the corporate class. They just will not do that. And, you know, I'm sure you know in the Congress that Pennsylvania congressperson, Fitzpatrick, offered that bill that destroys Dodd-Frank.
Yeah.
So it looks, you know, I mean, we talk about it in chat, you know, every couple nights, but people are telling me to just sit back and enjoy the shenanigans that are going on, but it's hard to, as literally as I take things, to be able to feel any joy in watching the Republicans screw things up. I mean, if it was just a movie or a fictive production or some kind of literary comedy, you know, I could laugh at it. But this really affects people, and it affects the country, and it's really hard to see that happen. I'm glad that Bill had a social worker come out, and I'm glad that they're going to make sure that he gets what he needs. We have the same situation here in California every year. A caseworker, not necessarily a social worker, is supposed to come out and see whether or not, they say that it's to protect me, but sometimes I wonder what the oversight is really about. There was a story on KQED Forum about the fact that there's been a lot of elder abuse, but they focus on elder abuse, but they don't talk about the fact that there are a lot of people living in their homes that can know very well how to direct their caregivers and can work very well with their caregivers. And it's just it's just to try to get some kind of a training program, a mandatory a training program that's now voluntary, implemented, and a lot of people who can hire and fire and train their own caregivers. And you know, Mercedes, we work in a partnership, and she largely knows pretty much how to take care of me better than I know how to take care of myself. So I don't really want her to have to go through a training program that's standardized that may not meet my particular needs. The other thing that happened is that the federal judge in Washington, Judge Leon, decided to not allow the Department of Labor to implement overtime rules, so the IHSS caregivers won't be getting overtime, but they will be getting the 7%. There was a 7% cut a couple of years ago, and Mercedes will get, perhaps in July, get 7% of her hours restored and get some more money. Other than that, you know, I'm just chatting with Devin and Bob and Grant and other people in the chat room, Timmy. We try to keep each other company every night, which is really good. I really need to have that that interaction.
That's nice.
With everybody. That's my social group. One of my doctors thinks it's not real. It doing chats and doing things on computer is not, you know, not real. It's not real contact.
Is your doctor fully abled?
He's in his early 80s. Yeah, he's fully abled. He thinks I ought to go out on the street, meet people, and go out and develop, contact with real human beings. He doesn't seem to realize that, you know, I've had bad experiences on the computer, but, you know, in this group, this group, the Hornchak group, and the Malloy Chat group to a lesser extent because they don't do voice chat, but I also like to be in Mike Malloy's chat. You know, this is a godsend for me, or a human send for me. And everybody in the chat room is, I keep myself going, and most, you know, everybody in the chat room, as you know, is very intelligent, and it keeps my mind going. I'm grateful. I'm really grateful for everything.
And, look, I don't know why I say look, Larry, community is what you make of it.
Yeah.
I think, not to flog an issue or anything, but had it not been for this community, and I think one of the first people to say it would be Bill himself, had it not been for this community that your doctor thinks isn't real, Bill might not be with us. And it is because of this, it's because this community responded, and I'm not talking about me, it's because this community, this online, virtual, not real, according to your doctor community, responded, I'm talking specifically about our buddy Jug of Punch, Thomas. That help was gotten to Bill that might not have gotten to him. And I can't count the number of times that people have reached out with a question or manifested their pain or their joy. And had it magnified or alleviated, depending on what it was, inside this community that your doctor thinks isn't real.
Yeah.
So maybe somebody needs to explain a little bit of that to him.
Well, what he's concerned about, and this is, you know, Bill was talking about personal, you know, his personal life situation. So I guess I do that on the chats with you, and I'm doing it in front of everybody who's listening. But it's like what he thinks is that I can't go out and get hugged. On the computer, I can't get affection, like physical, you know, contact with people using a computer, and that I'm largely using the computer as a means of not going out and not interacting with the world as it is outside. And he doesn't.
Hey, I'm sorry. That just makes me want to scream. Now I'm not telling you to never go outside.
I
can't imagine that you have physical, real world interaction with this guy, and he doesn't realize I have marveled at the amazing efforts that you put out to get out into the world, and it seems a little too facile to me, Larry, to say something like that.
Well. I have to say that I was out a couple days ago, and as usual, I run into Greenpeace folks, and I keep on talking to people at Greenpeace, and what he told me, he said, look, if you want to talk to somebody about this, about the AIC Act, call Greenpeace and talk to them directly. Don't come to me he wasn't being mean, he didn't use this tone of voice, but he said, you know, I'm out here on the street, trying to get, you know, people to give money and sign up. I'm not the proper vehicle to get the information out to, you know, because I'm on the street. But if you call the office and let them know, you know, that you want them to, you know, that you really push there on it, that's the way to go. And I also talked to somebody from KPFA, and I said, I'd like to see Mike Malloy and Bob Kincaid have a show on Pacifica. I mentioned Mike, and she said, well, you know, Mike may not be liberal enough to be on KPFA, but I'd like to see Mike Malloy on the radio.
Not so, liberal enough?
Yeah, he said she essentially said that he wasn't lefty, you know, he wasn't.
Jesus Christ! Oh, she's obviously never heard of him.
Well, she said she's heard of him. So I don't know. You know, this is a political. Things that go on Pacifica are as much personal and as much idiosyncratic as they are, you know, people use political arguments to take personal pot shots, and they don't distinguish, you know, between the two. So that's that. But okay, I really have to go. I've got to be on a call in about 3 minutes, and I've taken up a lot of time. But I hope I'll be on tomorrow, and I hope we're going to be doing our Friday on the Front Porch again. And I missed the chat room. And if there's anything that I can realistically do to help, let me know.
Thank you very kindly, Larry. I do appreciate it. I hope we'll be having a Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow night. We'll certainly be trying.
All right. Thank you, Bob.
Take care.
Thank you for taking my call. Good night.
Take care, Larry. Bye now. Our buddy Larry calling from Berkeley. And we'll go over to the Gizmo line. I suspect this is Ron.
Hi, Bob.
It is Ron.
Transplanted West Virginian up here freezing the boys off in Canada.
I suspect not nearly as bad here as what it is there, but yeah, it's been right smart cold here too.
It's amazing what you get used to. I was snow blowing the driveway the other day and trying to replace an auger belt that decided it didn't want to turn the things that made the snow move and get the hell off the driveway. And it was minus 35 with wind chill. And I was wearing my balaclava and my down jacket and my thick gloves and cursing and swearing all at the same time.
You're a multitasker.
Builds character, Bob. You and I have talked about character in the past.
Yeah.
I seem to remember you said, screw character, I just want warmth.
I think that may be a direct quote.
It's pretty close.
It's all that.
Anyway, yeah. I was just calling in because I hadn't done it in a while, and I thought I would say hi to all of you.
Well, I'm awfully glad you did, and in point of fact, I suspected that I had halfway conjured you by mentioning that god awful Scottish game.
Flog?
Yes, Flog. That's the one I play.
Oh, that's one way to pronounce it. Starts with an F.
Yeah, right, exactly. And you know, if one hauls out one's little used Scottish brogue, the game is also sometimes known as Fuck.
And with various colorations attached to the term, absolutely. But that's all part of its charm. It builds camaraderie amongst the people who are out there cursing and swearing. Anyway, I wanted to ask you a question.
Okie doke. I'll do my dead level best.
Something that doesn't get mentioned all that often. I alluded to it earlier tonight in the chat room. But everyone talks about CO2 emissions and what a dreadful effect that's having on the climate. And coal mines in West Virginia emit just a thunderous amount of methane. For example, the Big Branch mine, I'm not even sure if it's still operating or not, but when it was in the news, it was emitting 2 million cubic feet a day of methane, 50 tons every day, 24/7, 365. And methane is 20-plus times the impact of carbon dioxide. How come nobody ever talks about methane except for cow shit? And pig manure, we never hear it mentioned in terms of the impact of coal mining.
Anything that I say, Ron, will be a guess, but it will be what I hope is an educated guess. I think it's an effect of the other deleterious negative disastrous effects of coal mining. You don't hear about methane so much because you hear some because of black lung. You don't hear about methane so much because of CO2 pollution. You don't hear about methane so much because of particulate matters that you know, every asthmatic in America can thank a coal miner for his or her asthma, because it is exacerbated by particulate matter produced by and you know, not trapped, not caught, not bagged, not captured by coal-fired power plants. In point of fact, it's kind of a wonder to me that you can cite a number like that, Ron, because I didn't know it was being measured, and I
yep.
follow it pretty damn closely.
Well, I've gone down a lot of rabbit holes on the Internet. The numbers were there associated with the Big Branch mine. There are a lot of numbers from EPA, et cetera, in terms of the relative impact of methane versus CO2. And coal mines just emit a ton, millions of tons of this stuff if you add them all up.
And it's included, is it not? Because especially underground coal mines is what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
It's vented away by the giant ventilation fans that they have.
Where do they pump all that stuff?
Straight out into the atmosphere.
There you go. And it doesn't show up as a visible cloud. The EPA doesn't regulate it, although they're entitled to.
No, the EPA would be a bunch of commies if they regulated it.
Yeah, they don't have enough data to regulate it, they say. But it's one of those issues that's sitting out there like a great big glowing thumb, and nobody seems to pay attention to it. I'm reminded of that old Tom Robbins story of the girl with the big thumb. I forget the name of the...
Oh, yeah. What was that? Another roadside attraction. No, yeah, even absolutely. Cowgirls get the blues.
Cowgirls get the blues, yeah. The girl with the oversized thumbs. And, you know, we just don't seem to, doesn't get any attention whatsoever. And one mine, say the Big Branch, 50 tons a day, that is roughly equivalent to 10,000 diesel trucks on the road 24/7. And we pay no, and that's only one mine.
I seldom ask, and I don't think I've asked you to do this at all. Could you make sure you message me with those numbers? Because when I share that with my buddies, they're going to go, what?
Sure. I will even go back and do my best engineering scholarly effort with attribution and footnotes.
That would be monumental.
Hey, it's the least I can do for the voice of progressive radio in North America.
Well, yeah, him too.
By the way, is your blood calmed down? It's not smoking as much as it was before?
Oh, Jesus, God. Hey, you know, it goes from one day to the next. I was going to mention something to you, seeing as how you are calling from the Great White North. Just ran across this earlier today. I guess it's turning into this. This is apparently poisoned water season now in North America. You know, we passed, just recently, we passed the anniversary of the Freedom disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now,
did anybody notice?
Well, a few of us did.
Besides you?
A few of us did. A few. It's not like anything's being done about it, except for the defense lawyers who are there's a new claim by Gary Southern's lawyer that the federal government should stop being mean to his client and trying to take away his assets. I hope they kick his assets. I hope they kick his assets all the way to the sun. But so it turns out that just okay. So 300,000 people got poisoned in West Virginia a year ago, Ron. And in up in your neck of the woods, well, not terribly far away, maybe a little community called Longueuil, or God knows how it's pronounced, Longueuil, in Quebec. Okay.
Longueuil, I would say.
Yeah, in Quebec, not far from Montreal. There's 230,000 people who were told that they can't drink their tap water.
Yeah, usually that happens because of inadequate sewer systems. We get a heavy rain, and the storm sewers get filled with sewage and flushed.
Yeah, not this time.
Rivers.
Not this time.
Yeah.
No, not this time. No. A city-owned wastewater treatment facility has dumped 7,400 gallons of diesel fuel into the drinking water supply because of what is being called an equipment failure. And then to work within your paradigm there, the dumped diesel fuel got into the sewers from a generator and then flowed into the river that supplies drinking water to the city.
Yeah.
So early this morning, or early yesterday morning, the city told people not to drink their water, and then later in the day said, the water's safe to drink, even though people who live there were saying, they say it's safe to drink. My water still smells like diesel fuel. And so today, the city put the don't drink the water order back in place. Now, I imagine...
Sounds a lot like Charleston.
I'm wondering if Longueuil is how you say Charleston in Canadian French.
Could be.
I don't imagine their water system is quite as cobbled together as is West Virginia American Water down there in the Kanawha Valley, you know, covering as it does nine counties. But still, the question arises again, and I don't know if the Canadians will be any better at answering it than we have been here, but the question arises, once diesel fuel has flowed through an entire city's water system, how do you get it out?
The only thing you can do is just to flush every toilet in town for days. Yep. But at least they did have the wherewithal to eventually say, because they could be held liable, that, you really shouldn't drink the water. That's about the best they can do. We got in Ottawa here, for example, we have some of the municipal water is consistently tested as being a better quality than anything you can buy in a bottle. But people are still willing to pay $1.50, $1.75 for a bottle of tap water that's had CO2 pumped into it. And we still get situations where our sewer system, which is 100 years old in Ottawa, cannot handle the rainwater that's coming. I don't want to say it's because of climate change, but we've been getting a hell of a lot of massive thunderstorms and dumps of rain that come down very quickly, and that didn't seem to happen nearly as often in the past. And we're building ponds all over the city to hold the excess stormwater. They built one just near to me that holds 750 million gallons of storm runoff in three different settling ponds before they pump it back into the Trout Creek that runs right through my neighborhood. And that seems to work, but we still have storms where they will pump 250,000, half a million gallons of raw sewage directly into the river. And we've got a big, pristine river that runs right through the middle of Ottawa.
What is that river? Just for the sake of my own curiosity, what is that river?
We have a Rideau River that comes in from the south, actually, flows right through the center of town, and they built canals around it for the barges back in the 1800s. It's now, parts of it are turned into a 5.5 mile skating rink every winter, which just opened up and filled with muskie and trout, bass, you name it. But the major river is the Ottawa, which is very much like the Monongahela in terms of size, a major river. And that thing sometimes gets hit just from Ottawa alone with 500,000 gallons of raw sewage.
Jesus. Well, there's another stunning parallel with the Quebec story, Ron, and because you remember with the Freedom disaster, people started smelling the profound licorice odor of 4-methylcyclohexane methanol at daybreak on January the 9th of last year.
Yeah.
And they started calling the DEP, and the phones were ringing off the hook when the DEP came shambling in at 9 o'clock in the morning. And then it took them till 11:30 to find Freedom Industries. You know what kind of size Charleston is.
Yep.
So it took them 2.5 hours to drive 5 miles. And then it took GERT, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, another 5 hours to tell people maybe they ought not drink the poison. Well, in the Quebec case here, the spill of 7,400 gallons of freaking diesel fuel happened at 4 a.m. on Wednesday. Only hours later was the spill reported to the Environment Response Team in Quebec. And as a result, they couldn't stop the diesel fuel from getting into the water system because the people at the water system didn't know to shut down the intakes or anything like that. Now, between you and me, and I don't want to give anybody any ideas or anything, but if this is how we handle a patriotic capitalist disaster, kind of scares the piss out of me for how we'd handle a terrorist attack.
Unfortunately, I know far more about how that would be handled than I do about how the water would be handled. And all I can say about Quebec is the water company is probably going to be in line for a fine somewhere north of $1 million. But they will be exempt from civil liability.
So the people that they poisoned can't touch them?
Not really.
But then again, you have universal health care, so the people who need help...
yeah, we'll get it.
Can get it.
But if we look at Lac-Mégantic, the train disaster last year...
Yep.
There's been a $200 million settlement already approved for that in court. 43 people died. A bunch more were injured. The town's economy was decimated. Do you know how much the civil damages are in that, out of that $200 million?
Oh, Jesus.
It gets something just under $50 million to be spread across the entire group of people that were damaged. Part of it's going to be fines. Part of it's going to go to lawyers, obviously. I don't mean to disparage the legal community as a whole, Bob, because I know you were once a part of it.
That's okay.
But they're making an inordinate amount of money off of this. And the original railroad declared bankruptcy, was promptly bought up by another company. Does that remind you of Patriot Industries?
You mean Freedom? Yes.
Weren't they bought by a company called Patriot?
No, they were bought by a company called Mountaineer Holding LLC, closely yada, yada, yada. Patriot is the Patriot's the coal conglomerate that was put together as a Dodge by I think Peabody or and that's where they dumped all their pension liabilities, which they then turned around and bankrupted.
Okay. Yeah, all of the bogeymen seem to run together after a while. But bottom line is the folks were a disaster happened and wiped out the entire downtown area. They're going to get 20 cents on the dollar for whatever money is approved for settlements.
Jesus.
Yeah. So, I didn't call in to depress everybody. I actually just called in to ask a question about methane and say hello to.
And I am indeed fascinated by what you pointed out, and I want to know much more.
It's one of those areas where I keep going, why isn't anybody talking about this? So,
right.
But I've done that all of my life, so it's not unusual. Anyway, I will do some research. I'll fire it off to you in a message. And you can go forth and aggravate.
I will do my best, and we'll see if anybody else wants to aggravate along with us.
Okay.
All right, you take care, Ron. Good talking to you. Stay warm.
Will do.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye
now. Our buddy Ron calling from Ottawa. So both lines are open, 304-574-8178 and 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. I hesitate to even mention this simply because with the website being down, nobody can get to the PayPal interface, but I'll explain this again. Even though the website's down, we're still broadcasting, and that means we're still trying to keep up with the bills. And tremendous thanks going out to Roger for doing a Have a Show on Me tonight. Had that not been the case, we would have been in like a $400 hole. As it is, it's about a $200 hole. And even though you can't get immediately to the PayPal interface, all you have to do is just log into your PayPal account and then use my email address, bobkincaid@gmail.com, and we can raise maybe a little bit of funds because between last night and tonight, not a lot going on. And that means the hole gets deeper and deeper and deeper, and it gets harder and harder and harder to keep all of this going because, well, we are at the middle of the month and not. Well, we could be in better shape. That's why I mentioned this because our buddy Tom, out in the Bay Area, said, "I'm dropping a C note in the mail on my way home this evening. How about a halfway through January challenge?" So thank you, Tom. Tom would like to see his 100 matched by a couple of 100 more to keep us to the good instead of in this hole where we are. Thank you, Tom. Thank you very, very much. I'm glad that Ron called in because I wanted to make sure that the Quebec story made it into this evening's stack. I'm looking at photographs right now of people lined up waiting for water from today. One note from Steve Rukavina of the CBC says, water was supposed to be here at 3 o'clock. City employee says he's not sure when it's coming. Yeah. Maya Johnson of CTV says, huge lineups at water distribution centers in Longueuil. Some people have been waiting for 2 hours. And the question remains, how do you how do you get diesel fuel out of a water system? And once it's flowed into your, and this is the same question we were asking a year ago, and still don't have much in the way of an answer. How do you get diesel fuel out of a home plumbing system or a business's plumbing system? How do you do that once it's already run through there? Ron says you flush and you flush and you flush and you flush, but I still have to ask what happens, especially to these plastic compounds that we now use for plumbing, once they've had diesel fuel laying around in them for a while. I can't imagine that there's not some sort of something or another that happens there. Yeah. What else? I've got... This story comes from Michigan. It's a few days old. It has to do with the Grosse Pointe Park Police Department. And there's video involved. There's also audio. A man was apprehended as part of an operation by the Grosse Pointe Park Police Department, the Detroit Police Department. And the suspect is... the suspect was described by the Grosse Pointe Park Police Department as a parole absconder wanted for an armed robbery in Detroit. Okay. Bad people. Sometimes people do bad things. I'm not some sort of Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm that thinks that everybody's nice out there. They're not. But we still have minimum standards for how police professionally, because remember, they are law enforcement professionals now, because everybody's a professional now. It used to be the architects, the engineers, the lawyers, and the doctors were all the professionals. But now if you know, the way the language gets worked over, if you walk in a goddamn Walmart, you're a client. So, this... Okay, just so you'll know, did you hear those big thuds? This is video being shot from a good 20-25 feet away. Those sounds were the sounds of a policeman's boot kicking repeatedly the suspect, who is on the ground and already handcuffed. Okay? He's also being beaten by another police officer. There's another punch.
What did you say? Jesus? You're calling Jesus? You fucker! Don't you dare! Don't you fucking dare!
So they've kicked him and they've beaten him, this suspect, this parole absconder wanted for an armed robbery, this desperate man, who is no longer desperate, but is instead handcuffed on the ground, and they've kicked him a couple of times, nice and hard, with some good winter boots, and they've punched him a few times when he was defenseless on the ground, at which point he mutters, Jesus, Jesus, and the cop, well, you heard the cop say, what'd you say? What'd you say? Jesus? You're calling Jesus? You fucker! Don't you dare! Don't you fucking dare! Because, see, if you're a notorious parole absconder in the state of Michigan who may have or may not have committed an armed robbery, because we're supposed to leave those things to the determination of the criminal justice system, cops are not known for being particularly good at passing judgment on, well, people, but, you know. So, no, you do not get to say, Jesus, Jesus, you do not get to cry out if you should suddenly be having a conversion to your personal Lord and Savior. Don't you dare cry out, Jesus, because these members of the Grosse Pointe Park Police Department will say, What'd you say? You fucker! Don't you dare! Don't you fucking dare! Yeah.
This man is handcuffed and the police is beating him while his hands is cuffed behind him. It's two officers. I don't know, I guess two, three maybe. They were kicking him and pistol whipping him.
The man's not even moving. At one point, they picked him up like a sack of potatoes and just dumped him back over.
They're tabbing each other, talking about good job.
No, really, they're high-fiving each other.
What do you mean everything's in the car? What do you mean everything?
So when this video was turned over to the Detroit Police Department, the Detroit Police Department's prompt response was to say, that's not our officers. We didn't do that. That's not on us. So they determined that the arrest was yada, yada, yada. We were notified about this last night. That was Grosse Pointe Park Police Chief David Hiller. This subject was a parole absconder wanted for an armed robbery in Detroit. He was armed with a handgun. Now, of course, he didn't shoot anybody with his handgun. The Detroit police were more concerned to make sure. Detroit Police Chief James Craig said, there's no indication that a Detroit police officer was involved in the use of force. In our preliminary investigation, we've learned that this was a task force in which we were involved. We did have an officer on scene. He might be a witness. Well, we didn't do this. That's Grosse Pointe. Grosse Pointe. Yeah. So a policewoman shows up then. Female police officer.
What's your name? Jackson?
This guy say his name is Jackson.
Oh, your ride's coming.
So the female police officer, this video goes on for a while, the female police officer you hear goes on to say, man, that was a justified ass whipping. Yeah. Yeah. But he's not dead, and he was wanted anyway. So you know what? In America now, in 2015, if you're wanted for a crime, the police are apparently completely justified in beating the living daylights out of you. Deserving's got nothing to do with it. Right? Ron and Raleigh with a note. No matter how many deaths by... Have you noticed? No matter how many deaths by gunshot, choking, and whatever happens, it does not ameliorate the behavior of the police. No, they just go on being what they are. I want to take a minute, because the question here is not whether or not the officers killed the guy. It's whether or not it was necessary after he was handcuffed to beat the shit out of him for a while. And that is referred to as a question of the use of force. And I actually did some research on this the other day. And God help me, whenever I do research, it can you go right down the little rabbit hole in the internet. And I got to thinking, for different reasons, about a man named Giles Corey. Back during the hysteria of what was called the Salem Witch Hunt, Giles Corey, who was an old man by then, he was 71 years old. Giles Corey and his wife, Martha, whom he married at the age of 69. Martha Corey and Giles Corey were accused as the result of torture of being familiars of Old Scratch, Nick, the devil. When arraigned on the charge of witchcraft, trust me, this goes somewhere, Giles Corey refused to give his name, refused to answer the charge as to whether he was guilty or not guilty. In the law of the Massachusetts colony at that time, remember, 1692, the remedy for a person who would not answer charges was for that person to be pressed. The law made it pretty clear. It said that if a person refused to plead to a charge, that person was to be, quote, remanded to the prison from whence he came and put into a low, dark chamber. Low, dark chamber. Meyer Arar, Canadian, seconded by the United States to Syria for torture, kept in a low, dark chamber. Wait. Remanded to the prison from whence he came and put into a low, dark chamber, and there be laid on his back on the bare floor, naked, unless when decency forbids. That there be placed upon his body as great a weight as he could bear, and more. That he hath no sustenance, save only on the first day, 3 morsels of the worst bread, and the second day, 3 draughts of standing water, that should be alternately his daily diet till he died, or till he answered. That's 1692. That's the origins of freedom here in the greatest country on earth. Yes. So when Giles Corey refused to answer, he was pressed. And they placed stones upon him. Sheriff George Corwin took Giles Corey to a pit out in an open field beside the jail in Salem. Stripped Giles Corey, put him on the ground in the pit, laid a board on his chest, and then 6 men took heavy stones and placed them one by one on his stomach and chest. This torture, which, remember, was perpetrated in the name of Jesus, went on for 2 days. They kept asking him, "Will you plead guilty or innocent to the charge of witchcraft?" His only response was more weight. Which they obliged him by placing and eventually crushed him to death. In the name of Jesus. And that's how Giles Corey enters our history. What's interesting, though, is that Giles Corey was not just some poor schmuck. He was a landholder. He was a valued member of the community. And it was not the first time that Giles Corey had had a run-in with the law. And this is where we get the convergence with the question of the use of force. When he was 55 years old in the year 1676, 100 years before the American Revolution, and 16 years before he would endure the final trial of his life, he was brought to trial in Essex in Massachusetts upon the charge of having beaten to death a man named Jacob Goodale, who was a worker on his farm. Jacob Goodale was the son of Robert Goodale and Catherine Killam Goodale, who had emigrated from Dennington, Suffolk, England. Jacob Goodale was an indentured servant, which meant that he had been sold into slavery for a fixed term of years. It was written, Jacob was employed by Giles Corey and in a quarrel with the latter was so badly beaten that he died, according to a coroner's jury, of blood clots about the heart caused by the blows. Hey, remember the preacher last night who hit the child as hard as he could in the chest? Never mind. Corey was fined for the offense. He was fined. He was not imprisoned. He was found absolutely responsible for the death. By the way, he beat Jacob Goodale to death on the charge of having stolen some apples. Because in the theocracy that reigned in Massachusetts at the time, the master of an indentured servant could beat that slave at will. Now here's where the whole thing comes full circle. Because he was an indentured servant, he was not fully human. And that is why Giles Corey could not be charged with murder. Instead, in 1676, Giles Corey was charged with, and you will recognize this phrase, the unreasonable use of force. Because when a person was not fully human and therefore not fully vested with the protective rights of the English common law, that person did not have the human right not to be murdered. And that is why Giles Corey winds up being fined for what otherwise would have been the murder of Jacob Goodale, but winds up merely being the unreasonable use of force against him such that he died. What, then, does that say about the evolution of the concept of unreasonable or reasonable use of force by law enforcement in this country? What it says is that the reasonable use of force or unreasonable use of force by law enforcement in this country is a standard that was applied to white slaves. It is a slave standard. It is not a standard that applies to fully vested human beings. And we are still using that standard in 2015 to judge whether or not police were justified in beating, choking, shooting to death a citizen of this country. If you go down a couple of layers into the operating principles of this nation, you will find what the upper class actually thinks of us. And that is that we are not fully human. That we are, in fact, all of us, and particularly people of dark hue in their skin, indentured servants to the owners in our society. I'm trying to remember when it is that Section 1983 of the Civil Rights, well, it's the Civil Rights Act, right? Section 1983. So that's 1964. 1964 is when this country makes a determination that we would create a mechanism whereby we would recognize the violation of civil rights as being the violation of the rights of a full citizen. 1964. And I will tell you truly that winning a 1983 action is godforsakenly difficult. A little food for thought. Hey, Carol Baker.
Hey, Bob Kincaid.
How are you?
I'm doing not bad.
How are you, Prol?
Pretty good.
Don't steal no apples.
I won't steal nothing.
But when I ran across that shocked me. The idea that we still judge police action using a doctrine that was used in relation to force used against slaves.
I'm not surprised at all.
I about went cross-eyed at it. What? Because I mean, I thought I could no longer be shocked.
I didn't think I could be shocked either until I came across a story recently.
Yeah. Let us leave the confines of frozen Michigan or the ancient killing fields of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and hie ourselves southward toward Florida, Stan, shall we?
Sarasota, in fact.
Yes.
Yes. I understand that a lot of Florida cities, because it's warm there, a lot of homeless people tend to migrate there because they can physically stand to live through the winter. And so Florida is working very hard to criminalize homelessness. And this took place a while back ago. This is not a news story, but it was nonetheless disturbing. A homeless man had spent the night in jail one night because The police arrested him for charging his cell phone in a public picnic shelter. This was a 28-year-old man. He was charged with theft of utilities after a Sarasota police sergeant spotted him charging his phone at about 9:20 at night on a Sunday and unable to come up with a $500 bail for the misdemeanor, meaning he was in on a $5,000 bond. He had no choice but to stay in jail. Now, in his arrest report, the cop wrote that this homeless man, that the theft of city utilities will not be tolerated during this bad economy. And he also told the homeless man that he should charge his phone at local shelters, because we all know there's plenty of those.
Oh, one on every street corner.
Yeah. 3,000 homeless people in Kansas City and 300 beds for homeless people. And it was 7 degrees night before last. But the following Monday morning, a circuit court judge threw the case out, saying that the cop lacked the legal justification to make the arrest. Now, this was a 14-year veteran of the Sarasota Police Department, and they said they'd review the case, but of course, nothing ever came of it. And so it just adds to like a rolling battle between Florida cities and the ACLU that have clashed over homeless issues. The ACLU accused police of violating the civil rights of more than 6,500 people over 4 years by using trespassing warnings to shoo people off of downtown sidewalks. And after a lawsuit was filed, the city suspended the program. And now they're in the process of rewriting portions of their trespass ordinance to get around the ACLU. But here's the thing, is that we both know that the way out of homelessness is work. We know that you can't get a job unless you have a phone. If the poor can't juice their phones, I mean, and we're not even talking about the issues they have about bathing and things like that, but if they can't juice their phones, they can't get a call back. So either you want the homeless to go to work, or you're just fucking with them for fun.
I vote for the latter. For this, at least for this 14-year veteran of the police.
Well, and the other disturbing thing that I'm seeing is a whole lot of, there are places where they're actually embedding these spikes in concrete under bridges and stuff, so that the one place, the shelter these people have, is uninhabitable.
Right. Because we, look, Carol, we want them to die. I mean, I don't, you don't, nobody in this community does. But this Christian nation as a whole wants its homeless population to die.
That is true. But what I don't understand is that...
Because it's the same mindset that attends attends the same people who clap and go, yeah, hell yeah, up in North Carolina when Rand Paul says that half the people on disability are just a bunch of damn loafing fakers.
You know, back in the 60s, this country recognized that poverty is really man-made. It's oppressive. And they worked really hard on declaring a war on poverty. And for about 15 years or so, we made some remarkable strides in making things better. And that's when we saw booming middle class. We saw people who had lived in poverty generationally claw their way out. And then Ronald Reagan, St. Ronald of the Hills, was elected to office as a puppet of the Birchers, and this long downhill slide came. And we stopped fighting the war on poverty, and we started the war on the poor. And I've always thought that that was kind of odd language when you think about it, because a war usually indicates that both sides are armed. And poor people are more like jungle villagers with nothing more than a cloth coat and a straw mat to defend themselves, while the ultra-rich participate in saturation bombing campaigns to make their existence illegal. And I don't know about you, Bob, but I don't call that a war. I call it fucking genocide.
Yeah. Yeah. Living where I do and having been witness to the deliberate depopulation of Central Appalachia,
yeah,
I think that works. Genocide, you know, genocide doesn't have to involve train cars and train loads and no, it frankly, when it's carried out to its most effective ends, it's done a hell of a lot more slowly, with a lot less, shall we say, fanfare. Is that
Bob? Let me tell you what happened in my neighborhood last night.
Okay.
At about 7:45, I quickly cut out of the chat room and was seen no more. And I heard this huge explosion and could not for the life of me. It scared the hell out of the dog. And I could not figure out what the hell it was. I went to the door, opened it up. I didn't see anything. I didn't hear anything. Nothing. So I came back in, and I thought that was so weird. Then all of a sudden, I'm starting to get flooded with messages from the neighboring town of people asking if I'm okay. And I'm like, yeah. And they were like, well, there's fire and ambulance, police, and everything else rolling towards your town. And I couldn't figure out what it was. Well, I finally dug around and called enough people and found out last night some poor homeless man had been given permission to live in a travel trailer on somebody's property out here. And I don't know what kind of heating he had rigged into that thing, but something happened, something sparked. And this poor man, this poor homeless man with his two dogs in this little travel trailer was blown sky high last night. He was blown out of his bed and ended up landing in a field. His only companions in the world, his two dogs, dead. I drove by there this morning, and I'm telling you, there's nothing there but a tiny pile of rubble and some scorched earth. And what he did wasn't legal here, but Hooterville is kind of the redheaded stepchild of the county that I live in.
Right.
And
right.
So, they, you know how they always seem to want to push the poors into a certain area to get them, you know, out of my neighborhood?
Right. Preferably well, out of sight, out of mind.
This is the out of sight, out of mind area. And the thing of it is poverty is so crippling where I live that even though what he did wasn't legal, nobody ever has the heart to run these folks off. And this is the reason exactly why we don't let people, we don't want people doing this. But how do you tell a homeless person on a cold night that they can't do what he was doing?
Right.
You because I see this every day.
Sure. And see, your community engaged in an outpouring of sympathetic attempts at relief, try to do something, try to alleviate it. And I applaud that. And it always comes with a but, doesn't it?
It does always come with a but.
This is not something that has to exist. A civilized country would work to make sure that it doesn't. A civilized country would not rely on... hard questions. What do you do if you're homeless, it's becoming brutally killing, you know, mortally cold, and you're an atheist, or you're gay, or you're a gay atheist, because, see, the Salvation Army doesn't give a good goddamn about atheists or about gay people. We, as a, if we actually wanted a functioning secular society, Carol, we wouldn't have to demand that there be structures in place to prevent this from happening. We would have already put them in place without anyone telling us to. And here, one more. If we're a Christian nation, as we are so often reminded, there would not be a single solitary individual in want of shelter on a brutal night.
Exactly.
Just out of Matthew, 25 alone. If you've done it unto the least of these, my brothers, you've done it also unto me. Can't have Jesus freezing to death tonight, now can we? Absolutely not. Let's go out and round them up and get them in the shelter. A Christian nation doesn't put spikes under overpasses. A Christian nation doesn't even think about designing those damn things. Hey, Carol, if you don't mind, Devin just joined in and asked me to bring him in on the gizmo line for a little mini horn in. Hey, Devin.
Hi.
What's up?
I was just going to add that there was some recent polling that came out that shows that the people in America who hate the poor the most are the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, far and away. And surprisingly enough, most of the 1% actually agree with the poor that the government should do more to help the poor.
That's because they're further removed, Devin. Middle class despises the poor, what's left of the middle class, the most, because of that whole there but for the grace of God thing. The nearer you are to them, the more likely you are to despise them because they remind you of you.
Mm-hmm. You're one paycheck away from the
community. They remind you of what could happen to you at any moment.
Yeah. You know, I said earlier this evening that if we're sweating about SSI, let's just give everybody in this country making $100,000 a year or less a year. Let's give everybody $733 a month.
Yeah, but see, that would be a welfare entitlement program. You got to give it to everybody, even the billionaires.
Okay, we'll give it to the billionaires too. Everybody gets $730. Hey, let's just bankrupt America, because, you know, it would bankrupt America. Let's give everybody $1,000 a month.
Yeah. Which is...
I mean, do you realize we could do that out of the Pentagon budget and not a single general would have to eat rice and beans? We could give that out of the goddamn stupid F-22 Joint Strike Fighter budget that nobody wants.
And we should.
Devin, I got a roll. Thank you. Carol, thank you very kindly for jumping in at the end. And thank you for reminding me. Because, see, I want to talk a little bit more about that case, too, because... What happens if those power outlets are solar powered and it's just coming from the free sunlight that falls all over Florida all the time?
Socialism. And nobody can make a profit off of that shit.
Yep. Kenyan Muslim, anti-colonialist, you know. Oh, and one more thing. I've been searching Twitter all day, Carol.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the Je suis Baga hashtag?
I don't know.
You know, because that's the place in Nigeria that had 2,000 people killed.
Oh, Jesus.
That we've been so studiously ignoring.
I read Al Jazeera every day. I know what's going on over there.
Yeah, I know. And no Je suis Baga. Oh, and one last thing. Out of last night's story, you'll enjoy this. Out of last night's story about the Israeli newspaper that erased the women.
Yeah.
I found the best response yet, and I'm proud to say that it came from Tablet Mag, which is a Jewish publication.
Mm-hmm.
They responded to the ultra orthodox women erasing publication by creating a photograph that was nothing but Angela Merkel. Every single human being in that lineup of world leaders locked arm in arm, even Benjamin Netanyahu, was wearing the head of Angela Merkel.
That's beautiful.
It is indeed.
You can't murder an idea. You can't erase a virginia.
Nope. And, you know, sometimes the rubbing can actually be enjoyable. So I'm told.
I'm out of here on that one.
Bye, Carol.
Bye.
And I'm out of here, too. It's been a wonderful evening. Thank you very kindly. Thank you for joining in on this Thorn in the Side Thursday.
And hopefully we will be back tomorrow evening for Friday on the Front Porch. Hopefully we'll get back to fundraising. 2 days of no fundraising makes the horn an endangered species. So, yeah, we will cross fingers. Bye, y'all.